I think what might be especially interesting is to talk about our experiences and some of the joys and, of course, the many frustrations that we've experienced overseas. And then I hope that we'll have a lot of time for discussion. Some of you have worked overseas. I hope that you'll share those experiences with us, or any kind of questions or other things that people are thinking about. The questions we sort of want to consider are, first of all, does working overseas make a difference? Which certainly can be answered yes or no by many different people with validity. How can I prepare to work overseas, study, working, etc.? What about grassroots volunteers versus salaried, often policy-making people that work in offices? Those are valid questions. Do I want to work with a Christian organization, a secular, what we call PVO, which are the CARE, the other organizations that are also humanitarian but aren't necessarily Christian, with the government, the U.S. government? Those are the main people that do development. Or, as you said, a tent-making ministry where you're working in a job that has nothing to do with perhaps the development or Christian concerns per se, but certainly leaves you time to be a presence in a country where perhaps you wouldn't be able to work. And lastly, some questions about mission organizations. I worked for a mission with these last 5.5 years that I was in Senegal. I worked for the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America mission, which was far from what I ever dreamed that I would do. And so I think it's far from many people's idea of mission. So we'll consider that a little bit. But before we start that, we're going to talk a little bit about our experiences. I guess I'll talk a little bit first, and then Bill will. Bill worked for Habitat for Humanity in Zaire. And I worked, first of all, 3 years for the Mennonite Central Committee in Zaire also. Amazing to find that we both have that very unique or extraordinary experience of Zaire, which is like no other country. And now 5.5 years in Senegal with the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America. I chose to go to join the Mennonite Central Committee in 1979, as a matter of fact, while I was at Holden Village. Had been here for a couple months, had been, of course, for a long time looking at different organizations. I very seriously considered the Peace Corps and the Mennonite Central Committee, because with my majors in college in physics and religion, it wasn't clear what other avenues I might take to work overseas except teaching. And those are the two main organizations that I know of that send volunteer teachers overseas. I wanted to go to Asia, but the Mennonite Central Committee, MCC, doesn't send teachers to Asia, only to Africa. So it was a great unknown continent to me at that point. I thought that nothing could interest me less, but as it turns out, it fascinated me. And obviously I spent eight years there, so it's a continent that draws you to it, gets in your blood, and then you cannot stay away from it, I found. The Mennonite Central Committee was wonderful. They sent me for 5 months of French training in Belgium. They send other people for even longer. Because if you've been overseas, certainly know that the really key item is language. You have to be able to communicate with people. If we're going to be any kind of a witness at all, any use at all, we need to be able to communicate. And I had had 4 years of French in high school. And I'm sure if any of you had 4 years of French, you know how far that can go out of your head. But with that and the 5 months in Belgium, I was able marginally to teach better, obviously, as the years went by. But in looking at an organization, certainly you want to see what kind of language training possibilities they offer, because it's very, very important. If you go to a French-speaking or a country in Africa where the national language is something other than English, you will be in the unfortunate situation of having to learn two languages, which is tiring, to say the least. French is the national language. You speak it with educated people, but of course in the villages you need to speak another language. Teachers, not so much. In Zaire, I learned a language called Kikongo, but I didn't have to learn it that well. In Senegal, I spoke most of the time in Poular. A lot of language learning. If you're a disaster at languages, you might want to consider mission in this country.
When you said they sent you there, did they pay for that then?
Yes, they did. And the good Mennonite Central Committee salary, which at that point was $35 a month plus board and room. So we could live, but it's a different experience of Europe than most everyone else has. People are shocked to find out there I was 5 months in Brussels and never ate in a restaurant the whole time. I don't know anything about Brussels beer or restaurants or anything, although they're rumored to be wonderful. But they took care of it. I mean, and that's really a gift that an organization gives to you. So don't think that you are a great gift to the organization, especially for the first few years when they're really training you. I arrived in Zaire in early 1980, and of course was all set to change the world, enlightening these students to the wonders of physics and how that was going to help them answer technological problems in the modern world. But if some of you know something about high schools in most countries in Africa, the students were simply interested in passing the state exam, all that mattered to them, and it's true, the more I stayed there, the more I realized it was right. What did matter to them in their lives was to pass that government ordained exam, which allowed them to graduate from high school. With that, they could do a lot of things. Without that, they couldn't do anything. So of course they weren't interested in learning something that's sort of the wonders of nature. They wanted to know what was on the state exam, and they wanted to learn that. I think most countries are very exam oriented, more like Europe, but perhaps even to a higher extent, it becomes very rigid. So that's one great disappointment of an American teacher, that of course wants to teach people to ask questions and to invite them to learn more themselves about the world. The other hard thing was that the Zairean teachers I worked with, though of course they weren't paid at all at that point in time, 1980 was not a real great year for Zaire, they've had a lot of hard years, but at that point none of the teachers were receiving their salary from the government. But I somehow thought that, you know, under my example of great Christian love and teaching with low salaries, that, you know, we'd all work together to educate people. But with no salary at all, it's very tough. And the other teachers were at that point not very conscientious. They were all scrambling to try and survive when there was no salary coming. So our high school was in shambles, basically. The students who were supposed to have 7 classes a day might have 2 or 3 if those teachers showed up. So that was a disappointment to me also. One of the hardest times, now I'm telling you about the frustrations at the beginning, one of the hardest times I had was, I was trying to be so culturally sensitive, I mean this was really my goal, was when at the end of the first year, the students for one class, I was told by the principal, needed to move from this classroom to another classroom. And they just decided to be ordinary and say that they wouldn't move. And in which case, I was told by the principal that I had to give them all 0 because they wouldn't go to the right place. So I went back to their classroom and said, if some of you know French, I said, c'est bête, meaning this is really stupid, you guys, because bête means stupid, but bête also means animals. And they all interpreted it right away to mean that I was calling them animals, which was the most sensitive thing practically you could call them, because it seems that the Belgian colonialists considered the Zairians animals in some way. So they took this as a terribly racist remark and, you know, refusing. Now they were going to boycott everything, leaving me in tears and the rest of the school wondering how I'd become such a racist. But of course there were joys too. I belonged to a Bible study group of a bunch of young teachers and young nurses. There was also a hospital, it was a mission station. And we were a couple Americans and a lot of Zairians. And that was a very important group to me because that was the one place where I felt we could really have conversations about what was deepest in our lives. So I'll never forget that. And another thing that was meaningful was when I decided to live with a Zairean family for a few weeks well, about a couple months, actually one summer. My vision, and I was just talking about this with some people at supper, was to live among the people, live like them. Before I got there, I wrote ahead and said, please find me a Zairean family that I can live with and really learn about the culture. Well, what I was sent to was a Mennonite mission station where the missionaries had run things for a long time, lived in fairly Western style houses, and when they got this request, said, well, of course she doesn't know what she's getting into. You know, Americans don't live with the cockroaches and this and that, so didn't put me in that. So I was put in a large apartment, now with a lot of conveniences. I mean, no electricity or running water, but still it was a relatively nice place. That was very frustrating, but I think it's a common experience. Most people who go overseas are surprised by how good the physical living conditions are, disappointed by a lot of other things, but the physical living conditions were not too tough. Finally, I organized myself the last summer to live with a Zairean family, and it was thanks to a very wonderful Zairean man who was from that village, who had studied in the U.S. for several years, and so understood, I think, a little more about what was possible, and encouraged me, if I wanted to live with a family, to simply do it and live with his parents. And his father was the old pastor and had been around for a long time, and that was certainly one of the most memorable things that I did. They were confident that God would watch over me and that I wouldn't get sick, and truly I didn't.
Pardon me, where in Zaire was that?
In the south of Bandundu, near the Angolan border, but not in Shaba, the most well-known area where all the minerals are, sort of south of Kinshasa. Not to take too long in my experiences, I stayed there 3 years, was very frustrated by the educational situation, by the work situation. In addition to the other things, the state exam required that we teach things like advanced calculus and electromagnetism. Well, there was no electricity in the village, so that was especially hard to explain. Now, if any of you have had physics, you know how hard it is to understand electricity and magnetism, even with electricity and magnetism. It's very abstract, but with nothing at all, it not only made no sense, it of course was impossible for anyone to understand except to memorize what they had in their notebook, which is what they did. I was very frustrated with the teaching, but fascinated by Africa. It was in my blood. I had to go back, and I wanted to work in something that was more worthwhile or more meaningful to me, closer to the people's real needs. Because of course I had students that were coming to school hungry, eating nothing in the morning, no breakfast because they had no money, and here they were trying to learn this very complex calculus. And so that's why I came back and got a master's degree in agricultural engineering in the soil and water area, and then went as a missionary of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America. And that's what I talked about the other day here, so a lot of you have heard that. Worked especially in women's groups with gardening and tree planting and trying to do something with a very small-scale irrigation system. And that was fascinating. Stayed there 5 years, met wonderful people, the hospitality all over Africa, but I think particular in Senegal. I've never heard of anything like it. It's just fantastic. You can go anywhere at any time and you will be welcomed. That was a gift to me. I think that's one thing I learned more than anything else from the Senegalese, to always be hospitable. People would worry about me driving around in my Jeep out in the middle of the desert. I'd be far from any village at times, and my colleagues would say, you know, what would happen if your car broke down? And I'd say, I couldn't be safer. There was really no danger whatsoever. If I ever broke down, I would simply go to the nearest village, as long as I had water and didn't die of thirst, which you could in a very short time there, go to the nearest village and they would take me in for as long as it was necessary. Hospitality is a gift that I think anyone is struck by in Senegal. So I've learned an amazing amount, that my Senegalese friends have been gifts that I'll never forget. I'm back in the U.S. for the time being, and may go again in the future, but that I don't know. So now I'll let Bill talk about his experiences a little, not as long as me, and then we'll discuss some of these other questions.
All right, well, I was in Zaire also, and I was in the region of Equateur, and that is pretty much directly north of Bandundu, where Jane was, but a long ways off. Zaire's a really big country, third largest in Africa. I was working there with Habitat for Humanity. Have several projects in Zaire, especially in that region. A town called Gemena, about 100,000 people, but you would look at it and say that it had about 5,000 people as far as structural buildings that you could see, and see that it was a town. The rest of it, the population was pretty much in the area, but you couldn't really see it because it was behind trees and they lived in little huts, and so it kind of blended into the forest. I think the biggest challenge for me also, or you mentioned it, was the fact of how different it was when I got over there. You hear a lot of missionaries come to churches and you really romanticize it a lot, and think that they're doing a great job over there and doing a lot is getting accomplished, and you think that they're right up amongst the people and living right there with them. But I went over there and found that it was quite the opposite. It was the majority of Americans are over in Zaire are living like Americans. It's one thing if you're going over there as a business person and that's your job and you're making money over there. But if you're going over there particularly as trying to assist the people and have an effective witness and ministry, you need to be within the community itself. Habitat's philosophy, like the MCC volunteers, is pretty much grassroots. And Jane mentioned this afternoon that it's pretty tough to go as in that grassroots type situation and live with the people and a very simple lifestyle. It's difficult to do that, and even more difficult to have a career like that and stay like that, not just for 3 years, but for 30 years, which some missionaries have been over there that long. She was asking me, have a lot of volunteers with Habitat re-upped, you know, signed up again. Very few have, but actually very few of those have gone overseas again also. As far as the work itself, of course I had these ideals also as far as helping out the people and bringing their standard of living up. But I was disappointed in that also, because the main thing in any project that you do is educating the people, I think, as far as the philosophy and why you're there, and trying to get the people there to see it as their project and not the white guys, not the foreigners. And until they realize that it's their project, the project will fail as soon as you leave. It's happened millions of times in Africa and all over the world. So trying to get that instilled into their mind and trying to get them to come build their own houses. We were trying to provide a means for them to build their houses. It was difficult. They had a different work ethic. And they were used to missionaries giving them things instead of us helping them get things for themselves. So I had a difficult and a very disappointing experience as far as my work with Habitat in Zaire. It was a very stressful, very challenging. It was my job in particular was managing and teaching and procuring materials it seemed to be a lot of trying to wear a lot of different hats at the same time, and the attitude of the people was not always very appreciative, usually not appreciative at all. So as far as the work, I was disappointed. But as far as friendships with the Zions, I had about a half dozen really good friends there that I got to know, and we worshiped together and ate together and played volleyball together and just did everything. And that was really good.
Pardon? Were they all men?
Yes. Yes, they were. if I had become even so-so friends with a woman over there, it would have been hard. It would have been very difficult to stay just that way, because I could have been married 100 times over easily. I tried not to. So I suffered through that also.
Not to confuse us with Friday's forum title.
Right. Yeah, all my good friends were men. Some of them were single. Most of them were married, though. Most of the time, by the time you get 28 years old, you're married. And they were all, everyone was really surprised that I wasn't married. That's a big thing. I guess what I was going to say as far as ideals, I think it doesn't really matter what you go over there as far as your work, but it matters your relationship with people more than anything else. Whether it's evangelization or doctors or nurses or agricultural or construction or whatever it is, I think the main fulfillment and the most important thing is that we have a good relationship with the people in the community. They don't look at so much of what you do, but how you do it. Not so much of what you say, but how you live. And it was frustrating because I saw that the other missionaries would not have a half dozen good friends, you know, and they had been over there for much longer than I was. And they were resented by the community as a whole, generally speaking. They were resented very much for their wealthy lifestyle and not socializing amongst the Zionists, but socializing amongst themselves. They had a community within a community. I think it's important that that does not happen. It's easy to happen, though.
What church was this, the mission?
Well, it was Evangelical Free Church and Evangelical Covenant Church, but that's really beside the point because I've seen it with other churches also. But those were the two churches that were in my area. It's tough. I was telling Jane, I said, well, for me personally, if I couldn't stay at the grassroots level over in Africa and felt myself slipping and needing some more material things, which probably would happen, I would say, well, Bill, it's time to come home and live at grassroots here in America, which is like living high on the hog over in a third world country, really, in those cases.
Do you feel that missionaries might have tried early on, but then reverted to this? You felt disappointed and frustrated in your work.
I think it was human nature because back then, people were career-oriented, and when they felt called to the mission field, they felt like it was a calling for life. And most of them will come back and retire in the States, but they have a 20, 30-year lifestyle, life over there in the third world. And we Americans collect things quite easily. And it just, over the years, things accumulate, and from one generation to the next, the first missionaries, I'm sure, lived very simply, but they gathered a few things, and the next missionary, the next generation that came along, started at that point, and I think it just built up and built up like that right there.
I think
one of the reasons that it's happened.
I think you've really touched on a point that we often have glamorized serving overseas. Not so much, well, in our generation, we've more criticized. I mean, we said that missionaries are people who think they know the truth, who think they know everything. But I go out to a lot of churches now who say, oh, your work was so wonderful. We know that, you know, you really made a lot of difference. And it's very important not to do that. Bill and I have had this similar experience in Zaire, but Zaire is kind of a wild country. It's one of the toughest countries in the world to work. Most people who have been there, at least, can say. But I do encourage you to think long and hard before going overseas. It's not for everyone. And I think a good way to start is with a short-term commitment and see if you like it. Because if you don't like it, it's very unlikely that you'll do very good work there. And it's certainly no more valuable to the kingdom than most of the work done in this country. As a matter of fact, a very good case can be made by many people from the third world that if you want to help us, don't come, stay home, work through your government, work through your agencies in that country, and that's the best thing that you can do for us. I think in Africa, not too many people are saying that at this time. There are needs for various technical people. People that can teach English are in need in any country where it helps you along in the business or social world to be able to speak English. I mean, it's our universal thing that people like, even if they like nothing else. They usually like to learn to speak English. So I never encountered the attitude of stay home, don't come. I think people from who have been in Latin America have a completely different experience, a completely different idea. Maybe there are people here that want to talk about that, if you want to raise that. Also, is it Pietro? No, that's not who it is. Anyway, does anyone want to comment on the ethics of working overseas? What are your thoughts in general? I don't want to spend too much time on that, but you think it is important?
I had heard that it definitely has to be a call from God to serve as on a mission field, because it's certain the experience is so, the cultural shock and change is just almost, if you don't have God there with you getting you through that, it's just too difficult to get through. And to pick up and leave after you've committed yourself is even...
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we might all agree that it has to be a call from God, but how does that call come to us? That's in any of life's decisions. How do we know what God is calling us to do? That is certainly what we hope.
But it seems like, or with anything, that we maybe we have to make sure that when we're encouraging loved ones to go and overseas, I think that Christian presence is important. But we have to make sure that we encourage those in mission in this country and overseas, that it's a call and a performance of mission through genuine love and not sham love, that you do not sacrifice yourself and think that people owe you something, owe you gratitude, owe you anything. You do not sacrifice yourself. You make sacrifices out of love. And in this culture, there's a lot of where you owe me, even in brother, sister, mother, daughter, husband, wife, lovers, whatever. What do you owe me? I did this for you. And it's exactly what you were saying. They weren't particularly, they didn't know if you were doing them a big favor by being there. Mm-hmm. But as long as you realize that that's not your point to win the prize.
That's right.
That's hard with mission work.
But isn't, would you say to send another person there? If you didn't make much headway, why send another person?
It's very controversial. I'm planning on going back overseas with a Christian organization, maybe even with Habitat elsewhere, not to Zaire. I feel like the time would be better spent elsewhere than in Zaire. I think most of the people that I met with Habitat would agree with me, but not all of them. We have our different opinions. The two cases would be Zaire and Haiti are the toughest places for Habitat to work in as far as overseas. Latin America projects go quite well and the people comprehend it. Wouldn't go back for the reason that the people don't appreciate what you're doing. They don't appreciate it because they don't understand it is the thing. And until they grasp it, it's pretty much lost.
Well, why do you think they don't understand it?
Seems like Habitat seems so straightforward.
Yeah, it does seem straightforward, doesn't it? Well, there's a lot of reasons, and it would go back hundreds of years. As far as Zaire and other countries in Africa, Zaire is farther behind, like Senegal. Senegal is farther along is in development, let's say, just use that word, than Zaire is, for a number of reasons. But the main reason is because of, I think, is their geographical location in the world. Why are they so far behind? Because trade routes did not go through equatorial Africa like they did from the Middle East to West Africa and throughout North Africa. And then anybody traveling over the Sahara Desert and then comes to this big jungle tends to turn back around. Plus, in the jungle, everything was provided for them. They didn't have to have a decent house. They didn't have to grow crops. They didn't have to build roads or highways or anything. It was all provided there in the care of the forest, which was really quite interesting. But in today's world, that has really been a negative for this people because it's hurt them, and they're still used to that way of life. And now, though, the forest is not as great. You don't have as many animals to hunt, and so they've had to start learning to grow crops and start learning to raise animals. But it's still brand new, you know. Women get out there and dig in the ground with their hands and their little spade instead of using an ox and a cart. You know? That's beyond them. They don't know that yet. And here we've come in with airplanes and cars. We've skipped. You see the part that we've skipped, and that's really hard for people to do that. And houses comes in with these planes and these cars and automobiles and everything. And there's a part of history that they've just totally bypassed. and like I was saying before, they're used to handouts. And any work they do, they'd rather go in the bush and hunt. Or if the men don't have anything to hunt, they'd just rather sit there under the palm tree and let the wife go out and collect anything that she can collect, the firewood and anything else.
Okay, we're gonna run short of time.
Yeah.
Can we move on to something else, and maybe you can discuss some more with Bill specifically about Habitat later. Is that possible? I want to hear from what you think of. Did you want to make a comment on the ethics of Americans working overseas?
I don't know. You know, like, I haven't been to the countries that you were, but I mean, the one thing that I hate about it is, like, you know, when people go to Africa, especially, I don't know, you know who, and it most times it upsets me when they come and then, you know, like, it doesn't have anything to do with what you said. It's like they come and then they generalize all of Africa about the experience that they had with a specific country, or, you know, and then it totally, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And also the other thing is when he said about what he said about the missionaries, I guess the way why, I mean, especially with my experience with missionaries in Namibia, I think the problem was, you know, when the missionaries came there, you know, they helped the people, but also, you know, they wiped most of the traditions, especially because they were, you know, like, regarded as like, you know, heathen and stuff like that. We can't do this. I went to a missionary high school and I hated it for the rest of my life. It was like the worst experience, you know, like I had. But, you know, like, I guess that's why, you know, and they tend to be very individualistic and, you know, with the feeling that we should be great. How about this?
Thank you. I think it's very important that we hear that voice mm-hmm. and that we continue to listen. If it's not right for us to be there, we need to leave. There's no question about it. My experience is that things have changed, and we realize more and more now that we're servants. As I said, everywhere except Senegal, our church would work with a partner church, and we would listen to the local church and say, do you want Americans or do you not? And anytime that the church says no, you know, we'll do this ourselves, that's their say. And we would simply say, can we help you in some other way at that time? But we really need to confess and repent for the terrible, terrible things that the missions have done. On the other hand, it's very heartwarming, and I'm proud to see that Christians have at least tried so much. In the world of Africa, I haven't seen any other organization working to the extent of Christian missions year after year, of in health and education especially, and agriculture. Government programs come and go, secular organizations come and go, and at least missions tend to be committed for a long term. I left after 5 years, that was the minimum commitment. So I can't say, you know, for a really long term commitment. But at least we don't come and think that we know it in a year and then leave. Did you want to say something more?
I guess, you know, like, yeah, I think you have already, like, pinpointed that out, that if people are, like, you know, going to work out there, they shouldn't expect just to, like, going across to another state in the United States. It's a totally different experience, especially if you're gonna work there among the poorest people. It's not even like maybe living in an African city. It's a totally different experience, and you would probably need lots of, you know, courage. Because I heard like people were saying that they went out there. This was like from a teacher in New York. They went to some Western African countries, and the people started like leaving 5 days after they've been there because they were missing hamburgers and stuff like that. And
have an idea what you're getting into. Thank you for that too. I think we want, so that we have some time at least, we want to move over into a few specifics. I've talked to some people here who are seriously thinking about going overseas. What kind of preparation we can do, and then what kind of organizations you might want to look at. So I hate to cut off discussion in something else. As she said, you a lot of people go over and either detest it or the people detest them. I mean, there's a lot of failures in people working overseas, and people come early. So all the preparation we can do is a great help. First of all, as far as education, I'm a great promoter of science and technology or health fields. Granted, that's not the answer to everything, but I think it's one thing that's more transferable across cultures than a lot of the other fields of study, and it's certainly something that there is a shortage of. Really, all I can speak of is Africa. I should limit myself to that, because the Latin American and Asian experiences are really very different. You have a lot more educated people. Where I've been in Africa, there is a lot of need for education. The health fields, the agricultural fields, and the technical fields is what whether missions or government agencies, that is what is being done. Community development skills are also certainly important. Another thing I'd say is work experience in this country. And I say that because I don't have any. And I think it's a great weakness. You go to another country and you have to go through that learning, that sort of apprenticeship that you would have in your profession if you had stayed here. The Finnish mission with whom I worked most closely required 3 years of experience in that profession. I mean, many of us change careers, okay? But in that career that you're going to work in Senegal, you must have worked in at least 3 years here in this country. And I think that's a strength. I mean, why be your first few years as a nurse when you're not that great anyway? In Africa, we need to have our best people, our best qualified people going into other countries. Not people who are just barely qualified. I mean, the traditional
experience, lacking experience.
Right. A traditional attitude has simply been, since we're Americans, somehow we know more. We know more about problem solving, and with our education, we'll be able to make some kind of contribution. At the same time, I think there's really a role for people with liberal arts degrees, which I imagine most of you are. I think that's the most common people. Say, I majored in philosophy. What can I do overseas? Or things like that. I hear a lot. I encourage the Peace Corps. Now, that could be controversial. I think people that experience in other continents especially would disagree. When I went, I didn't want to work for the American government. It was very important for me to do that same secular kind of work. I didn't want to be a missionary either, but in a church organization. But through the years, through all those 8 years, I've seen a lot of Peace Corps volunteers and had many friends. And I think it's a fantastic opportunity to get overseas and to learn a tremendous amount when you don't know a whole lot that's useful. I mean, I was fortunate to find the Mennonite Central Committee with their high salary scale, as I say, which was able to send me as a teacher. But we go through those first 2 years, especially overseas, and we just don't know that much. And we're gaining a lot more than we're giving. So I think that you may as well have the U.S. government pay for that as people's voluntary contributions. The training programs are great. You get language, you get some kind of a technical skill for what kind of a program you're going to be working in. And then at least the volunteers that were near me went out and lived with families. And that's the best way, as any of you who have lived overseas know, that that's the best way to really get into a culture. I was very fortunate in Senegal because I was able to choose my own place to live. So I chose to live in the same compound as a family, in one sort of cement house with a wall around it, and they were in another. So I had some privacy and some not. But that was more similar to what the Peace Corps volunteers did. They get into the culture in a way that many long-term people never will. You might not be able to stand that for more than 2 years. I think a lot of people would feel that way. A wonderful few people in our culture are able to do that year after year after year, really live at village level. But the experience of Peace Corps qualifies you then for a lot of other jobs where you know a language. And then I think you consider working in the missions, or of course you have a lot of opportunities with government, with the Catholic Relief Service, Lutheran World Relief, CARE, World Vision, whatever organization appeals to you. So that's advice I'd give to a lot of people. Try the Mennonite Central Committee, try Peace Corps. Whatever it is, consider that you are learning your first few years. But it's a great thing for us to learn. We need to learn. How many people here have worked overseas?
How long time do you want to talk about?
I don't know, any. A week. I don't know what you do in a week, but
10 days.
10 days? Oh, well, that's do other people want to make some comments on the preparation issue? What would you suggest from what you learned and did?
I went with the American Lutheran Church when it was still the American Lutheran mm-hmm. Church. And I went without a college education as a house mother to the American children. So I wasn't actually working with the Malagasy people. But I was there for 7 years, and you can't live in a culture for 7 years without touching the lives of the indigenous people. And the experience I had came from the missionaries themselves before I went over.
I certainly agree with what you said about preparation. I definitely made a decision that really it was Robert who was working. I was living there. I did do some teaching overseas in Somalia. I wasn't able to work in any capacity in Somalia while we were there because it just wasn't done for the women to do that. One does strike a lot of that. But yeah, I did not feel I would go overseas and presume to do something that I didn't feel fully qualified to do before I went. I think that's a very important point. I guess my one word of advice about going overseas, I think we saw some pretty bad things in Peace Corps, we saw some good things, but we only saw one really terrific project the whole time we were over, which happened to be United Nations Food Organization, is don't go in the private sector. It's soul destroying. We mainly went in the private sector, and you find yourself involved with some things that will. We only stayed for a year in Somalia for that reason. I would have loved to stay in that country longer, but we could not tolerate what the company we were working for was doing, so we just had to remove ourselves from the situation.
Mm-hmm. In terms of
exploitation? Yes, and just ill-advised. It was just a very poorly planned project. The company that Robert was working for had done the feasibility study, and they were also the company that was first in line to get the contract. Needless to say, they found it very feasible.
That's really true. There's a network. I was learning more and more about that and wonder now. I mean, now after 8 years working much more at a grassroots level but now getting an advanced degree, I conceive of the possibility of working more at an engineering consulting firm or something like that. I mean, it's possible. You have the possibility of making a bigger impact than you do working with one village.
Yes.
But you also have the possibility of destroying your soul.
I imagine if you choose the project and the company very carefully, I wouldn't say that it's impossible. It's just such you do have to be careful.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do you want to say anything about preparation? What do you advise to somebody who's going overseas?
Language.
Yeah.
Language. Communication, that's the biggest part. And if you go with a group, it'd be great if they would give you a good cultural orientation too. Mm-hmm. But I think language is the most important. And if you can get a good formal program going in that country, not at the site where you'll be working at, but somewhere else, a different city, where they won't try to put responsibility on you already without knowing the language, that'd be great. And that way you can just focus on the language and on the culture and learn the language and the culture so you'll be more prepared when you do your job.
I just wanted to make a comment on the qualifications that you just said. I just want to elaborate on that. In 1988, when I went home for a two-year break in college, we found a great disappointment because it was the year when the South African Army doctors were removed from the hospital, and I think there was a call from other countries for doctors, and most of the doctors that we received, many of them were from Germany anyway, I think from West Germany, and they were working at the hospital, and the doctors, the native doctors, were very, very highly disappointed because most of these doctors that we got, they barely knew anything. I mean, they had to be taught for almost the whole year, on all these kind of things.
By the Namibians.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's very, it would be more helpful if someone is like qualified and is experienced in whatever they're doing.
All of this is, oh, do you want to, go ahead.
I was just going to say, earlier on you mentioned that if you want to try it out, you'd recommend a short-term experience. How long and short-term would you recommend before trying a long experience?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, I went overseas for 5 months with a college program. I think a lot of people do something like that. 3 months, 6 months? A year, whatever you feel like you're sure you can do, no matter how awful it is, you know, that's the problem. You probably will have to pay your own way for something like that. I mean, no organization would have any reason to pay you to go over for something short like that, unless you're very highly qualified. I know doctors sometimes can go over and work in refugee camps or something like that where they're very short. Anyone else, I think you would be doing well to spend your own money if that's something to you, or even go as a tourist. Go as a responsible tourist. Visit friends you have. If you know a foreign student from your studies and you have a possibility of visiting that person, if that person invites you, or visit missionaries. A lot of ways you can see if that's a place that you can live in or not, because there are too many stories of people that step off the plane, go to their village and say, I can't live here, and go home. That certainly happens. Yeah. All of this with professional qualifications and talking about that is a very different vision than a whole different style of mission, which we were talking about at supper, with where one goes and simply lives in a poor community. The vision of the Little Sisters and Brothers of the Poor or something like that. I don't have any experience with that, where your ministry is not so much in your technical work, but you really live really, really at the level of people. Like I say, I lived with a Senegalese family, and for me that was wonderful. When I started out, I didn't have electricity or running water, but gosh, by the end of the 5 years, the city had put it in, and it was spectacular. So I was still on the same level as the local people, but that level was a lot more comfortable. I think the vision that no matter what kind of a lifestyle or what kind of a style of mission you choose, is that as Christians we want to be present among people, as Jesus was present among us. I mean, that's the idea that there's something about Christians living with people that embodies the ministry that Jesus calls us to. So missions have a new vision from the old one. And so I would encourage people still to think about missions. Don't think about it if you don't know a language and don't have any skills. Our mission organizations can't afford that. But think about getting qualified, getting experience, maybe even with another organization, and then serving with the church in that way. Maybe I was a little too focused. What else do people want to ask questions or make comments about in any way? Oh, one more thing. I brought these books that are in the Resource Center. So I'm not giving you specific names of organizations or specific addresses, but this book, The Overseas List, is the one probably almost all of us have used who are looking at a wide variety of organizations. The biggest one, the one that sends the most volunteers, is certainly the Mennonite Central Committee of Christian organizations. And of non-Christian organizations, it's the Peace Corps. But look, and you never know what might come up in your particular field, but look at books like this, write to people, follow up with phone calls, and if it appeals to you, I think nothing can be more fascinating. I never talk about service or sacrifice, because I don't think it's a sacrifice to work overseas, not in the least. It's a fascinating opportunity. Other comments or specific kind of questions that you have?
Mm-hmm. How do you think people going into a country should respond to political situations? People going in with mission work. I think it's very difficult to generalize.
Mm-hmm. In many of the countries in Africa, things are happening where there's no good and bad, it seems. There's just often just chaos. And so I think the only thing we can do is stay out. It's very clear with any of these organizations, including the Peace Corps, that you never, ever give any information to the U.S. government. And that's, it's clearly stated, and it's interesting that even the Peace Corps, because of course they had problems in the past with the CIA infiltrating the Peace Corps. So now they're very strict on it too. You can't be questioned. You never answer to a U.S. Government officer. I had an interesting experience this last year when the country to the north of me, Mauritania, kicked out about 60,000 blacks. It's an Arab government, mostly whites. And they kicked out the blacks, non-Arabs, from the south. So all of a sudden we had all these refugees in town. It was an amazing thing for me. I never thought that anything like that would happen, and I never thought of working with refugees, but there they were. Well, so we worked, we delivered food. I worked with a committee of Senegalese. It was the Senegalese who were so open and good about receiving them. But when you see a situation like that of phenomenal injustice, that was the first time I'd seen it, of course you want to work politically. So that's the only experience I have. I started writing letters back to the U.S. and seeing what the U.S. could do. I talked to people sort of in the know about that. Why wasn't the U.S. speaking out more? All the ambassadors happened to come through my village, which before that, I mean, was in the middle of nowhere. But all of a sudden, you know, the Belgian ambassador dropped in, the American ambassador dropped in, the German ambassador dropped in. But nobody, everyone wanted to help the refugees, but nobody wanted to speak out. And I learned a lot about the delicacy of diplomacy. The only work I know is to be totally uninvolved, but that may not be the only answer.
I would say be uninvolved. I guess it would go back to my philosophy as far as it's got to be from the people itself, work through them. And if you think that something politically needs to be done in the Christian community, I think it's up to the local Christian community to do that, because they just look at it as another foreign power if we were to do it. It's like, it would be a lot like military involvement is what it would be in their heads and in their hearts is what they would see. That's what it would come out, I'm afraid. So I would definitely say we have no business as far as getting involved politically. I think that's awfully dangerous.
Do you have a comment on that, or do other people?
I just think, kind of from my context, that I would disagree with it.
And where is your context?
South Africa.
That you think it is appropriate for a foreigner to get involved?
My experience of Americans coming in, well, there is one organization called Médecins du Monde, which is Doctors of the World, which sends doctors to Sackler Clinic, which is in Khayelitsha. And people, it's not, I don't think there have been any American doctors coming in, other doctors or whatever, but they get fully involved in the clinic and the workings of the clinics. And it doesn't only entail doing medical work, it entails working within the community, attending community meetings, training primary healthcare workers from the community. And that entails definitely getting involved in the whole political situation. And for the doctors to come in and to say, well, we're not going to get involved and we're going to remain objective, and that they can't actually do that. Part of their carrying out of the work is to work with that community, and the community is fighting against the government. And I think they definitely have to be in solidarity with the people's movements in that situation. And I would very much disagree of people coming in and saying we're not going to be, or trying to remain distant from it. I think I'd have much more of a problem with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, wherever we are, we're certainly called to be in solidarity with the community, mm-hmm. to work against whoever or whatever is oppressing them. I included my disclaimer of not knowing anything about it, but South Africa too, where there's much more of a clear oppression. I was working in countries where really it's very hard to identify who is the oppressor. Is it the drought that's oppressing the people? Is it the government? It's possible. But it was very difficult to identify any oppressor. It was a frustrating thing for me who thought that would be much more my role. But I appreciate you saying it because there are so many different contexts, and I can see in South Africa it becomes very political as soon as you empower people.
In your orientations, were you encouraged to be not take a stand? I mean, did that come up in your training?
Well, it's not that you can't take a stand. No, I remember the you want to be a servant. I mean, that's the word that would be used over and over. Be a servant of the people in whatever needs that there is. But I think it's often imperialist of us to think that we know an answer in a foreign situation.
But then should we be there?
A very good question. Servant, being a servant, always.
Yeah, it doesn't matter so much where you are, it's just that as long as you do have a servant and loving attitude wherever you are.
Yes, but you pointed out that you probably weren't that helpful there.
Oh, not as far as what my eyes could see, no. But as far as...
You had several roles there, though.
I know I certainly grew a lot. And I think you learn a lot more than what you would teach to the people during your whole stay.
Okay, thank you very much. And we're happy, of course, to talk to people any time.